The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here on KPCG and kpcg.fm, where you can get the live stream of this program every weekday, weekday morning if you happen to be there in the United States, or in the afternoon, or in some places of the world where we have listeners at night. You can also get the live stream at thetrumpet.com. And of course, you can get the podcasts at both websites as well. Well, we talk a lot about significant anniversaries on this program, or the significance of these passing anniversaries. And as far as world events are concerned, yesterday and today mark significant turning points in these last days that we're living in, these prophesied days. First of all, yesterday, March the 18th, well, actually, if you go back a day before that, March 17th, 2014, just 4 years ago, Crimea's parliament in Ukraine declares independence. That's March 17th. And then the next day, March 18th, Vladimir Putin's Russia claims Crimea as its own. The Russian bear devours little Crimea 4 years ago, yesterday. Russia, as you know, used its military to steal another country's sovereign territory. It just waltzed right into Ukraine and took over Crimea. The map of Europe had to be redrawn. And the United States, of course, didn't do anything about it. The United States, under the direction of Barack Obama, we might add, did nothing. Nothing. Just like with Georgia a few years before that. Now, of course, people should have seen all of this coming. Just an awareness of history, even fairly recent history, would have informed a casual observer. But knowing what we know about Bible prophecy, it makes it obvious, pretty clear where this is headed. My father in a program, this is from March of 2014, right as this was happening with Crimea. Notice some of the history that he takes you through in this particular clip. This is from a program, again, in March of 4 years ago, clip six.
Notice what I wrote in February 2014 in our Trumpet print edition. Quote, Russia used military force to invade the former Soviet nation of Georgia in August 2008. I wrote the following in our October 2008 Trumpet issue. Quote, Russia's attack on Georgia in August marks the beginning of a dangerous new era in history. This was the first military strike of a rising Asian superpower, and there will be more. There will be more, I wrote. Will the Georgia strike actually spark European unification? And will a crisis occur over Ukraine? Well, that was written in 2008. And here we are seeing a crisis in Ukraine. And it really was all prophesied because you could see the rising power of the Prince of Rush, and he considers that his country, Ukraine and Georgia. He considers that a part of his union of nations. So you knew there would be problems with countries in that area, and there will continue to be, believe me, and you can certainly count on that.
That's my father in 2014 just taking you through some things that we've written about Vladimir Putin, Putin's Russia, over the past couple of decades. Crimea, I mean, that was viewed by Russia as its greatest victory in, well, probably decades. Putin's been in power, and the way he sees it, he's righting many historical wrongs. And as if to reinforce the significance of that anniversary, March 18th, yesterday, Russia had its sham presidential election, and Putin held it on the fourth anniversary of the takeover of Crimea. He sees it as significant. Of course, he goes through the charade every 4 years, or I guess it's every 6 years now. He's got another 6-year term. He wins in a landslide. Surprise, surprise. But as Jeremiah Jacques brings out, he's got an article coming out, by the way. Putin has 6 more years at Russia's helm. Now what? As Jacques brings out, I mean, he would have won anyway. But the way it's set up, of course, it's rigged from start to finish. Some challengers are prevented from running. And then, of course, there's all the reports of stuffing the ballot box. But even if you take away the illegal activity, there's quite a few people in Russia that still, they love Putin. They love Mother Russia. They love the fact that he's correcting these historical wrongs. Vladimir Putin is one who sees the demise of the Soviet Union as the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. That's his words. And he's working, as I say, to correct those wrongs, to rebuild the empire. And it's happened, it's happening rapidly. Here again, look at some of the recent history. My father goes through this also in that same program from March of 2014. Here's clip 5.
The Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, and when it did, the Western world was rejoicing because the Cold War was now ended, and it seemed like everything was going to be so nice. But then in 2005, Vladimir Putin said this, quote, "The demise of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century." So he's gone about to recreate the geography of the old Soviet Union, and it's going to change the course of world history. He's doing it, and with a lot of power and almost no resistance, certainly none that you can see yet, except it is going to begin to come from Europe. There will be resistance from there.
There's still more to happen in Europe, more prophesied events to unfold. But look at this expansion of power. Look at as my father wrote a year ago, look at this evil, ruthless, vindictive leader. Look at what he's getting away with. Invading Georgia, invading Ukraine, inciting trouble, terrorism, wars all around the world, supporting or propping up all of these dangerous regimes, all of these terrorist organizations, murdering dissidents, murdering journalists who don't even live in Russia. Brad McDonald covered that with you last week. I mean, he's trying to kill off people right here in the UK. People he views as traitors. Mr. McDonald wrote last week, by the way, this is that attack where he tried to kill that former spy that lived in London and his daughter. They were found in a park, keeled over. This is generally being perceived more as a political or diplomatic issue, Brad McDonald wrote, and not for what it really was. This was an attack on British sovereignty. It shows that the Russians have no respect or fear of Britain, and it reveals a lot about Vladimir Putin's character and ambitions. He's a murderer. He's a psychopath. And then you look, just to continue with so many of these prophecies being fulfilled, you look at the weakness in the United States. I mean, everyone's so, in the media that is, they're so concerned about all of a sudden they're concerned about Russia because of Donald Trump. But look at what happened for 8 years under the Obama administration. weakness, the infamous reset button early on in 2009 with Hillary Clinton, and then again, doing nothing when he just devoured Crimea, handing Syria over to Russia. President Obama leaning over, remember, to Medvedev, saying, you know, if I win this election, this re-election, I'll have more flexibility to give you what you want. Or how about mocking Mitt Romney in the 2012 run-up to the election, saying that Romney was living in the past to consider Russia any kind of a threat? Well, come on, that's so 1980s. Let's get with the program, Mitt. That's what it was like for 8 years. As the Russian bear reawakened from sleep, Putin's been in power now for 18 years. He's got 6 more years. I mean, he's ruled longer than a lot of the English monarchs in its history, the history of England. The weakness, you contrast it with the strength being projected from Russia and from China. I'll touch on that in a second, here in a bit. But look at this headline from the Times of London. Vladimir Putin secures landslide election victory. Again, it was no surprise, 76% of the vote. As far as all of the official counting goes, probably more like 50 or 60% if you take away the ballot box stuffing. But still, he secures landslide election victory thanks to Britain. It says here, Vladimir Putin secured a decisive victory in the Russian presidential election last night, with his campaign claiming that turnout was bolstered by the confrontation with Britain over the poisoning of Sergei Skripal. Mr. Putin, it says, 65, took more than 76% of the vote according to early results, although the polls were marred by reports of rigging. The turnout reached almost 60% 2 hours before polls closed in Moscow. So a lot of the Russians are fired up. Yeah, we're sticking it to the UK. We're poisoning people in London. We're strangling people to death in London. This is great. We're correcting historical wrongs. That's the way that he sees it. And he's got a fair bit of support. And Russia's power is growing. The Times also noted millions of Russians went to the polls across 11 time zones yesterday, with no doubt over the result, as Mr. Putin faced 7 weak government endorsed candidates. Says there were numerous sightings of ballot box stuffing and so on. Well, there's that. 6 more years. Again, I'll refer you to Jeremiah Jacques' piece. That'll probably be posted later today at thetrumpet.com. But here, Russia's growing power, and Jeremiah goes through this in his article. It's growing military strength. Russian submarine activity at post-Cold War high. That's from Stripes.com, a news agency. Richard sent me this morning. Russian submarine activity is at its highest level since the 1980s. He's rebuilding the empire. He sees the Soviet Union days as the glory days. It says, in Europe, a more aggressive Russia is challenging the U.S. and its allies in conventional military ways that recall the Cold War, as well as with newer electronic methods. U.S. patrols in the Black Sea have doubled. Brigades are rotating regularly along NATO's eastern flank, and efforts are underway to ensure the faster movement of forces in Europe. There's a reaction to this in Europe. You need to go back, by the way, and listen to the Trumpet Hour from Friday. Just an outstanding Trumpet Hour, week in review, with all of the Trumpet.com contributors, hosted by Joel Hilliker. But there's a lot in that program. I mean, we had a comment last week about Richard Palmer's program when he filled in for me, going through all of the prophecies about the coming trade war and just how it's challenging to wrap your mind around those prophecies and all the complexities of international trade and economics. And it can similarly be difficult to just grasp what's happening in Russia. But look, Russia's all over the headlines these days. Here they are trying to assassinate former spies in broad daylight. In broad daylight in London. And last week, as was discussed on the Trumpet Hour, the United States blamed Russia for a series of cyber attacks targeting the American power infrastructure. And then it was discussed on Friday's program, this uranium mining deal. The Obama administration helped them with that as well, by the way. But the uranium mining deal between Russia and China? Where is this leading? And it's not just Russia. Of course, God does single out the leader of that nation in Ezekiel 38, the Prince of Rosh. And it's pretty clear that Vladimir Putin's going to be heading up that 200 million man army. The army that's mentioned in Revelation 9. But he's going to need other nations on board with it. Other kings. They're the kings of the East, plural. That's in Revelation 16 and verse 12. This article here, also from the Times, propaganda in overdrive as Xi cements his grip on power. Here you have this sham election in Russia. And then in China, where there's well over a billion people, you have President Xi strengthening his grip on power. It says in the Times, the delegates in China's National People's Congress wept with joy, and social media users competed with one another to express their delight after Xi Jinping was unanimously chosen as the country's president without a limit on his term in office. And they're just jumping for joy. They want the strong authoritarians. Are people really watching what's happening in the world today? We've got our attention focused on what, like I covered last week, what the children are saying about gun control. But do the children see what's emerging out of Russia and China? Do they see what kind of a threat this poses to the West, to the UK, to the United States? It says here the Chinese Prime Minister, Li Keqiang, was also reelected by the National People's Congress for a second five-year term over the weekend, but the elevation of Mr. Xi suggested that Mr. Li's influence was in decline and that the new government would be dominated by supporters of the president. Listen to this. Soon, after all, 2,970 of the carefully selected delegates voted for Mr. Xi. China's propaganda machine shifted into high gear soon after this vote. Television footage from the Great Hall of the people in Beijing showed some weeping with delight as Mr. Xi swore an oath of loyalty to China's constitution. Isn't that great? I mean, he's just trying to uphold the constitution. And he has control over the media, so the propaganda's going out. They're showing the ones weeping in support. It says an editorial carried by many Chinese newspapers on Sunday referred to Mr. Xi as China's helmsman, the expression used of the republic's founding dictator, Mao Zedong. It was to prevent the rise of another Mao that the Chinese Communist Party introduced a five-year term limit on its supreme leader, which was jettisoned by the National People's Congress last week. So there's term limits, and Putin comes along and jettisons that, and Xi comes along and jettisons that, no problem. And now they're in there for life. Now they're the absolute ruler. And you think about all these prophecies. The Prince of Rosh in Ezekiel 38, the kings of the East in Revelation 16, amassing this 200 million man army. That's Revelation 9. It's building to Daniel 12 in verse 1 and Matthew 24 verses 21 and 22. We're talking about the main players of nuclear World War III. That's the significance of all this. And so you see where it's leading. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger. On my orders, coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war. These are opening stages of what will be a broad and concerted campaign. More than 35 countries are giving crucial support, from the use of naval and air bases, to help with intelligence and logistics, to the deployment of combat units. Every nation in this coalition has chosen to bear the duty and share the honor of serving in our common defense.
That was President George W. Bush 15 years ago today. Another anniversary. There he was on television, national TV, announcing the start of the U.S. or the coalition invasion of Iraq to topple Saddam Hussein. It seems like so long ago because so much has changed. Look at America today. Look at Iraq today. Look at the Middle East today. But there he was, the leader of the United States, back at least at a time when the U.S. did project a little more power than today. But how did it turn out? I mean, it's like my father said, I played that clip in the first segment. He referred back to 2001, the Soviet Union collapses, and the Western world rejoices because we say, well, this is great. The communism has collapsed. We've won. We've won the war. And it wasn't long after that announcement you just heard there from George W. Bush, it wasn't that long after that many people were cheering. Well, look at what we're doing in the little nation of Iraq. Carrying on with that statement, this is George W. Bush 15 years ago today. Here's clip two.
A campaign on the harsh terrain of a nation as large as California could be longer and more difficult than some predict. And helping Iraqis achieve a united, stable, and free country will require our sustained commitment. We come to Iraq with respect for its citizens, for their great civilization, and for the religious faiths they practice. We have no ambition in Iraq except to remove a threat and restore control of that country to its own people.
That's George W. Bush 15 years ago talking about the sustained commitment that we're going to need to have to realize this through to the end. And it's not like we're looking to take over Iraq, but we want to restore control there and then hand it over to its people. And so, okay, that's happened. Has it happened? Did the people pick up the baton and move forward in a more united, stable, and free country? Like I say, a lot has happened in these past 15 years. A couple more clips here from that same address 15 years ago. Here's clip three.
The people of the United States and our friends and allies will not live at the mercy of an outlaw regime that threatens the peace with weapons of mass murder. We will meet that threat now with our Army, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, and Marines, so that we do not have to meet it later with armies of firefighters and police and doctors on the streets of our cities. Now that conflict has come, the only way to limit its duration is to apply decisive force. And I assure you, this will not be a campaign of half measures, and we will accept no outcome but victory.
Nothing but victory. Nothing but victory would be accepted. So the United States went on the offensive, leading this coalition of, what did he say, 35 nations. And soon after the invasion, Saddam went into hiding. He was only able to speak to his people occasionally. But in just 3 weeks, coalition forces toppled the regime and captured most major Iraqi cities. And major combat operations ended. I think it was May 1st, 2003. Saddam was found hiding in a hole several months later. And then 3 years after that, he was found guilty of his crimes against humanity, sentenced to death by hanging, executed in December of 2006. Problem solved, I guess. Well, if you take a short-term view of it, or if you're looking at it in 2003, if you're looking at the 3 weeks that the United States forces just basically barreled across the nation of Iraq, or Saddam, finding Saddam, the trial of Saddam. But look, now step back and look at the bigger picture here. What exactly did the United States accomplish in taking aim at Saddam and in not going after the head of the snake, as we said at the time? President Bush said on that night, 15 years ago, here's the last clip, clip four.
My fellow citizens, the dangers to our country and the world will be overcome. We will pass through this time of peril and carry on the work of peace. We will defend our freedom. We will bring freedom to others, and we will prevail.
That was the United States, or the U.S. position, 15 years ago. But what does Bible prophecy have to say? What did your Bible say? What did we say at the trumpet? You can go back and look at it. Look at what we were writing in 2003 as this invasion was happening. My father, this is actually reprinted, but we put it in the Trumpet in June of 2003. Is Iraq about to fall to Iran? And in that article, my father brings out how that campaign in Iraq, it was just, you know, the latest round of America's war on terrorism. But he explained that even though Iraq is a dangerous part of the equation, part of it, that the United States wasn't going after the head of the snake. He asked in that 2003 article, this is 15 years ago. You heard the sound bites from 15 years ago. Here's what we were writing 15 years ago. Where did all this world terrorism begin? In order to find where the head of the snake is, we have to ask, where did all this world terrorism begin? Where did it begin? And then he takes you back through some history, some recent history. He takes you back through the Islamic Revolution in Iran from the late 1970s. And of course, over the years, he's talked a lot about this history on numerous Key of David television programs. Here's what he had to say, I guess this would be 2 years ago, destroying Islamic terrorism. This is clip 7 from 2016.
But you see, we have said for many years, if you're going to stop radical Islam, you're going to have to kill the head of the snake, and that happens to be Iran. The rest of them, they're just periphery. They're not the big terrorist, the king terrorist. And the king of the north, or the king of the Holy Roman Empire, is going to destroy them. Our material will prove all that to you. You don't have to guess about this. I have said in 2003 that we have to cut off the head of the terrorist snake. That was from the 2003 November Trumpet magazine. And I said in 2006 that America lacks the will to confront Iran, the head of the terrorist sponsoring snake. That from the Philadelphia Trumpet, September 2006. I said the same thing in April 2008 Trumpet. Iran is the head of the terrorist snake.
I mean, really, we've probably talked more about this over the past 15 years than just about any other topic. The fact that the U.S. invasion is just clearing the way for the prophesied takeover of Iran. Not from the United States, but from Iran taking over Iraq. He pointed that out over and again. He referred you to so many of those headlines from the Trumpet. This goes back further. This is what my father said back in 2006. This is 12 years ago, clip 8.
We see Iran virtually taking over Iraq. And we've said all along for years and years that you're not going to conquer this and win this terrorist war until you kill the head of the terrorist snake. It is not going to happen. And Europe will soon see that and soon deal with that problem.
Yes, indeed. We've got to watch, not only with respect to this subject, watch Europe's reaction, but as I said in the first segment, Europe's taking note. And again, this was brought out in that Trumpet Hour discussion from Friday. Go back and listen to that. That quote there, again, was from 2006, that clip. I think it was a public speaking campaign that was then converted into a Key of David program. And look at what's happened in the 15 years since. Of course, Iraq just turned into a free-for-all. There were the 2 or 3 years there where ISIS was basically just running through both Iraq and Syria. And then the United States, incredibly, joining together with Iran and Russia to run ISIS out of the region, to squash ISIS. I mean, there actually has been a period in these, a long period, in fact, in these past 15 years, in the 15 years since George W. Bush talked about prevailing, talked about winning this war, talked about accepting nothing less than victory. And there have been years during this 15-year bracket that the United States has actually fought together with the head of the snake. Not only have we handed them Iraq, we've fought alongside the forces just flowing into Iraq from Iran, joining together with Soleimani's forces. We didn't cut off the head of the snake. And now look at where that snake is, or where it has gone throughout Syria. You see Iran's influence in Lebanon and even in Israel, Yemen, Bahrain, Africa. And now it has a stranglehold on Iraq. Iraq, this is from Real Clear Defense just last week. Iraq as a client state of Iran. It says here, Iraq is scheduled to hold parliamentary elections in May. Here's some more sham elections. At least 28 Iraqi political parties associated with paramilitaries that fought Islamic State have registered to run candidates. Many of these parties, like their parent militias, have close ties to Iran. So Iran will be pulling the strings. Further on, it says, the fatwa led to the formation of the Hashid al-Ashabi, that's militia group, which attracted around 60,000 fighters organized into some 60 units. Iranian supreme leader Ayatollah al-Khamenei directs at least 44 of these 60 Shia paramilitaries. Others are under the authority of Sistani or are affiliated with Muqtada al-Sadr. Iraq as a client state of Iran. Further on in this article, it says, now the regime wants a pro-Tehran government in Baghdad that would give Iran a safe western border, allow it to influence oil prices. Iraq has the world's fifth largest proven oil reserves with 140 billion barrels. Remember all of the lefties when George W. Bush was going in there saying that Bush and, of course, Vice President Cheney, all that they wanted was Iraq's oil. They're just doing it to line their pockets. It's just a takeover. They want all of the oil. They want all of the wealth. Well, the United States clearly didn't go in for that reason, we now see. And who is? Who is going in and helping themselves to all of this wealth? It says, in the early 2000s, Tehran preferred that both Iraq and Afghanistan should remain in a state of manageable chaos that kept the Americans occupied and unable to focus on Iran. Thus, from the moment that the Americans took charge of rebuilding Iraq, the Iranians sought ways to bleed the Americans dry, primarily through their campaign in Anbar province. I mean, they took a long-term view here. So much has happened in just 15 years. But here's Iran thinking ahead. Okay, let America have it for now. And then we'll bleed. It'll be death by a thousand cuts. All these improvised devices, a few U.S. soldiers dying here and there over the course of several years, and eventually they'll get out. And then it's ours. Then it's ours. It says Iran's growing influence in Iraq became clear in 2008 when David Petraeus, then commander of U.S. Central Command, received a text message from Qassem Soleimani, the commander of Iran's elite al-Quds force. The message read, General Petraeus, you should know that I, Qassem Soleimani, control the policy for Iran with respect to Iraq, Lebanon, Gaza, and Afghanistan. And indeed, The ambassador in Baghdad is a Quds Force member. That's crazy. The message, it says here, highlighted the brazenness of Soleimani and of Iran when it came to dealing with Iraq, and it illustrates why Iraq's former national security minister later noted that nothing got done in Iraq without the approval of Soleimani. One final word here. This is from the conclusion of this Real Clear defense piece. It says, 7 years later, Iran's influence across Iraq remains obvious. With the rise and fall of ISIS, Tehran has another opportunity to shape political developments in Iraq. This is bound to concern Iran's neighbors, particularly the Saudis, who appear determined to stop Iran's growing influence in the region. Well, and that brings up another prophecy, the Psalm 83 prophecy about these two obvious camps there in the Middle East. Well, when we come back, we'll just conclude today's program by just going through again some of the things that we've said over the years about what I just read to you there from Real Clear Defense. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
And I go on in the booklet here. You should read that paragraph again. The way events have unfolded since that time have opened the way for that scenario to be fulfilled even more dramatically than I imagined. In 2003, the United States eliminated the leadership of Iraq. Saddam Hussein was the only leader that Iran feared. Now the U.S. has taken him out of the way, but does America have the will or strength to guard the spoils of war? Prophecy states that it does not. Has the U.S. now cleared the way for Shiite Iran to rule over Shiite Iraq? That was written over 15 years ago, before the war on Libya even.
That's from my father's radio, or rather his TV program, from a few years ago. Again, going through some of the things that we've written over the years regarding Iraq and Iran, the head of the snake, the king of the south, as it's referred to in Daniel 11 and verse 40, a prophecy many of you are familiar with. But here again, just to put the two together, in the case of the United States, Leviticus 26, verses 19 and 20, it says, "And I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron, and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain." Your strength shall be spent in vain. I mean, you hear George W. Bush's words today, and you do want to, as an American at least, you want to cheer him on. Or you look at that and think, well, at least there was a show of strength. There was a show of strength. And even we acknowledge that in that 93 article. Or 2003, I mean. My father said, "Now that Iraq has been taken out of the picture, Iran is even closer to becoming the reigning king of the Middle East." And then listen to this statement. "It may seem shocking given the U.S. presence in the region right now, but prophecy indicates that in pursuit of its goal, Iran will probably take over Iraq. That's what we were basing our forecast on, Bible prophecy. And here the U.S. had this show of strength. I mean, it was all over the place in the Middle East. But what does the Bible say about that strength? It says your strength shall be spent in vain. I mean, we spent all of those American lives, thousands and thousands of soldiers, trillions of dollars. All of that strength, and it was spent in vain. And here you have now Soleimani sending that text to General Petraeus, saying, good general, I think you know about us and our control over this region and this one and this one and this one and this one. Petraeus is long gone. The United States is long gone. And you think the United States is in the mood to reassert its position of authority in the Middle East, in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, in Yemen? The United States is gone. The region, I mean, it looks entirely different today than it did in 2003. Back then, someone reading the trumpet would have thought, oh, come on, are you seriously saying that Iran's going to take over? Given the U.S. presence in that region, in that state, in that nation right now, are you seriously going to make that claim? Well, now look at it. Now look at Iraq. Now read Real Clear Defense. Those kinds of articles, they come out almost every other day now. I mean, you have to sift through them just to pick one that you want to quote from. Listen again to what my father said. This is from 2011, clip 10.
And it appears that Iraq is going to be just solidly with Iran. And I have been predicting that since the early 90s because of what these prophecies say. I've been predicting it that long. You're not going to see Iraq become democratic. It's not going to happen. And there's going to be a great strong turn toward Iran in that nation. It was a mistake for us to remove Saddam Hussein from Iraq if we weren't going to have the will to keep Iran out of Iraq. But we've not kept them out. And they have the upper hand in Iraq even now, and the whole Middle East knows that. And that's one reason why they fear Iran so much.
That's from 2011. The whole Middle East knows. They know what's going on. Saudi Arabia knows what's going on. And again, the sharper commentators, they know too, just like that article I read to you. They know. They know that the takeover is complete. And there may be some sham elections. Or there may be a constitution of some sort drawn up that sets term limits here or there, just like within China, just like in Russia. I mean, you're seeing this happen all over the world. You're seeing the rise of these authoritarian dictators. And here in our own nations, weakness, sickness, division. This is life after America. This is life after the British Empire. Look at the emergence, these emerging powers. One final clip here. This is from back in 2005. Here's clip 11.
So, if you're going to fight a war like this, it's very much like a boxer climbing into a ring to fight the opponent with one hand tied behind him, and there's simply no way that he can win. So we have to look at this as a unit, the sponsor and the terrorist. We must look at it that way if we're ever going to win. Now, as I said, we got Saddam, but now Iran and Syria are feeding terrorists into that nation, trying to destroy what we've already built or what we're trying to build. And we're not doing anything to stop them yet, if we ever will.
That's true. All those improvised explosives, they were made in Iran, so many of them. They were killing our troops. They were killing our soldiers. And then the more we tried to pull out, the more ISIS was given free rein. And the happier Iran was to just let the chaos continue for a while. To let the United States just get to a point where finally they're fed up. We want out. We don't want any part of this. You can have it. It's yours. And that's how it's played out. You've been getting truth these past 15 years. You've been getting truth if you've been reading thetrumpet.com, if you've been watching the Key of David program. But most people don't. Most people don't. All they see really is what's right in front of their face. There's no awareness of history, not even recent history. That's why these anniversaries are important. 4 years ago yesterday, and Russia conquers another state's, another nation's sovereign territory. 15 years ago today, the United States just unlashes this massive invasion, not to take over the nation of Iraq, but to just restore order, to just get rid of Saddam so that the people can have it, so that the people can vote, so that they can be a democracy. I mean, everybody wants a democracy, right? I mean, that's the way we are. That's the way Americans think, so surely the Iraqi people will think the same way. And no one will dare interfere or meddle in that democratic process. That can't happen. I mean, that's so 18th century. That's so 17th century. Well, we cleared away Saddam. But that was a big mistake. You can't disconnect the terrorists from the sponsor. You have to look at it as one unit. That's what my father said. If you're going to have a massive show of force, if you're going to have a dominant U.S. presence, well, it better be where the head of the snake is, or once you leave, the head of the snake is intact, and he'll just take right over. He'll devour the neighbors. And that's what we see happening. It's wonderful, really, to know the prophecies of God. I mean, it's painful to watch nations die, your own nations. But it surely is a wonderful blessing to have the light of God's prophecies shine forth on these many events so that we can know the significance, so that we can know where they're leading. We can't lose sight of some of these things that have happened, even in the last 4 years, even in the last 15 years, or going back to the end of the Cold War, going back to the collapse of the Soviet Union, what's happened since 1991? I mean, at the time, the West rejoiced that this is the end of the Soviet Empire. This is the end of communism or the USSR. And I'm sure there was a lot of rejoicing in the Bush administration, even just weeks into that invasion in 2003. But now look where we are today. God's word is sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program or send in some feedback, some comments, as always, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.